That's very much the way we are in the executive branch. You must have just cause for firing them, and you find out what just cause is when an arbitrator tells us.
Ken, I think you stated that you know, many supervisors, some of whom may even have taken this course and read the pamphlet, really don't know what not recommended for rehire means. Could you put something right on the rating form so that they're aware of exactly what this means to the employee?
Certainly we can.
I mean, it's not going to solve the problem, but it might at least alleviate some of them.
We're finding out in some of these requirements, quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, that the supervisor who has got a less than adequate employee now, some of our supervisors, they work out something else for them to leave instead and leave a good record, because they want to get on with their business, and to actually record this individual as an inadequate performer is such a hassle. It's going to take up so much of their time over the next 2 months that they'd rather just settle it quietly and pass the problem on. I get equally concerned about that, and in an appropriate balance. And I'm not disagreeing that some people are unfortunately penalized by a supervisor who doesn't know what they're doing. But it works the other way, too, to the detriment of the state.
Well, that's must fuss and get rid of them and let them go someplace else so you don't have to buy
it. Let them go across the street and make more money for somebody else. Right back into state employment.
It's like writing an excellent
document for a lousy employee. Supervisors give wonderful praises on current employees to get them transferred.
Well, I told you about my brief sojourn in I rated I had three employees and I rated them.
And that
one was crying all day long every time she'd come near me. Sobbing. She looked like an unmade bed most of the time.
But that's what it gets down to, Mr. Chairman. We can come out with the best guidelines and everything else, and some of the supervisors know exactly what the rules are and how to do it right, and they can give courses in it. When it gets down to facing another human being that's got a paycheck and has a family to support and so on, it is a different situation.
Well, that's why we need a really good thing of penalties, you know, so that things are put in writing, like an admonishment and then a reprimand. And then you have something to back up a rating of not recommended for rehire.
Well, how many supervisors? What do we get supervised out of? You're a supervisor?
I'm general government, but actually I do supervise one employee.
And Roger, you're a supervisor?
You don't have much problem then, do you?
No.
Are you a supervisor?
I have been in the past.
Would that be a good work tool for you? If you just add something so that you would it take some of the sting out of it? If you could just pull them in and say, now look, here it is. And here's why you're being terminated. And adios.
If you had something written, it would be helpful.
Roger?
In some cases,
mm-hmm. Well, in the majority of cases.
Yeah, in a great majority of them, right. Mm-hmm. But like Ken says, even the best of guidelines and stuff, once it gets into arbitration, you don't know how it's going to come out.
Well, I had an employee, as an example, who was always tardy. And she was tardy by a half an hour, and frequently would take long lunch periods. Well, I started out by calling her in, telling her and giving her a letter of admonishment. I said, if you don't improve, this is what's going to happen. So the next time she was called in, she received a written reprimand, and given 10 weeks in which, or 10 days in which to improve this tardiness bit. She didn't improve. I fired her and put it in writing, had her sign it. And, you know, if that had been in the state, it happened to be in the federal government, I would have had all that backup as to why this individual would not be recommended to rehire.
Mr. Chairman, I think it works both ways, and I'm sure without the guidelines, Ms. Jun did an excellent job, and I think we ought to realize we've got a lot of managers and supervisors out there that are also doing an excellent job. It seems like it's the fouled up ones that we address. And
I'd like to relate to you a story of guidelines and what it did in the Postal Service. A clerk working in a post office got into a dispute with another employee, walked off the job, went home, got a sidearm, came back and shot the employee.
Supervisor.
That's the way to solve the problem. No, it was a fellow worker. They called the police and he went off to jail. The supervisor and the next level of supervision sat down and composed a dismissal letter. They thought this warranted dismissal and fired the employee immediately. It went to arbitration and the employee was reinstated because the guidelines that were promulgated required that the immediate supervisor write the dismissal action and then independently the next level of supervision review it and concur. And these two had corroborated on it and removed the review process.
So the point, because he didn't kill the guy.
So the point is, if we promulgate some regulations, we better be darn careful what we're doing and that they are going to address the situation. Exactly.
One thing I have, Mr. Chairman, too, is if we promulgate regulations, most cases, and I think Greg will do this, that if you've got supervisors that do carry it out and others that don't, and we know that'll happen, you're going to lose the case because you didn't treat every employee the same.
That's right.
Then you have a supervisory problem, supervising a supervisor somewhere down the line. Some of what we're talking about today is that way. You're a higher level supervisor overseeing the work done by lower level supervisors. I used to supervise 8 employees, and my boss was a division director, and part of his duties was supervising us as section heads. And he did his job, and he knew what was going on. If I had employees coming in late and I didn't do anything about it, I got dinged for that. So we're talking about...
He's talking about the post office, and I heard a terrible rumor that they had to fire a guy down the post office down here recently because he couldn't read.
Well, he could probably go have been reinstated if he could shoot. Let me, Mr. Chairman, just say
something. You know, rumors get around, though. Can you imagine a guy, like Lois said, but this is a rumor that was floating around all over, that there was a guy down there at the post office and got fired and he couldn't read. How could he get into the thing to start with?
That's pretty weird.
Almost contrary to what a lot of people believe, the representatives of workers do not, the workers are not always right on these grievances with respect to termination review. However, the ones that are overturned, that Ken was referring to, are overturned because the supervisors haven't done their work. In every case, whether you've got a technicality or the fact that there's no paper trail with respect to the employee, it's the employee's, the employer's requirement that they follow their own guidelines and own directions with respect to management practices, and they don't. And we feel just as badly about putting a bad employee back on the job as a result of an overturned termination as the employer does, because we know sooner or later we're going to have that guy in front of us again. Why are you looking at me over the rim of your glasses?
You're wearing good formal day. You kind of have your sincere blue suit on when you make that.
And now I got my sincere tie on.
Well,
it's true.
That's
really true.
Yeah, I would imagine. Last business agent for the bartenders union, I had this one guy that was always wanting a job and nobody wanted to hire him because he was a drunkard and he was a thief and as such, they'd only take him when it was just absolutely necessary. But I couldn't tell the people to hire him. I couldn't. And yet that was my job. So when you tell me about jobs of union representatives, I know what the jobs are. Most of them are crooks.
They never caught you.
Well done.
This guy called me up and he said, if you don't give me a job, I think it was on a Monday, he said, if you don't have any work on my Saturday, I'm going to beat the hell out of you. And he could, too.
That's the reason why you were quit to work, right?
That's why I quit the job. This guy was light heavyweight.
You're still getting those calls from the constituents, aren't you?
No, I don't
believe that. They vote this way or meet the hell out of
the election. They love them. They love them.
Well, how are we going to resolve this thing? Is there any... You'll get together with the staff, you say, and try to set down some kind of... Maybe we should put it on the other way. Maybe we should put the onus on the supervisor that they must do A, B, C, D, and E before they can fire somebody.
Maybe we need to write the guidelines.
Maybe that's what we ought to do. Should we do it that way?
Mm-hmm. Except if somebody comes in with a sawed-off shotgun.
Well, I think we should talk really address primarily the not recommended for rehire. That's what
should
we're talking
we do it
about.
That way? Should we be the ones that, in other words, the supervisor must do these things before they can fire somebody?
I think that was the point that we've tried to raise in the past, and that is each case has to be looked at as an individual case, uh-huh. even though the actions might be similar. If you follow a procedure or process and you miss one of those steps, then the merits of the case are lost. Whether it's a good, bad, or different employee.
If those are developed, Mr. Chairman, I would ask, would there be some ironclad fence built around them that they were not subject to collective bargaining and negotiation? Because we're talking about 16 or 17 employees. Otherwise, it's all they'd apply to.
What are you and your representative say about that?
Well, we have all kinds of rules now that grounds for dismissal and management rights. Just cause. The state can fire a person for incompetence, unsatisfactory performance of duties, unexcused absenteeism. I look at the big problem is notices like this are put up on the bulletin board. And they don't hold any credibility with the employees. Because you know you're not going to get fired on the item 3C for arriving late for work. And the notice is grounds for dismissal.
This is just a catch-all in case somebody wants to get rid of somebody.
Well, it's too loose for one thing. It really doesn't make sense.
All it does is discourage the employees and provides for bad morale.
I think something along the one that you gave us from the U.S.
Absenting oneself without approval or authority of failure to properly notify employer of supportable reasons therefore.
Chairman, I might say why this is published. It's required by the local 71 contract if you have something like this and you post it.
Well, why doesn't it say local 71 only?
when we wrote it up for local 71, we thought we'd use it for all the rest of the employees, too.
But these guidelines really would not... I can see supervisors that would use some of these, and some of them aren't that serious. But it does say grounds for dismissal. On the other hand, this USCG guide for supervisors, although I don't agree with all of them, I think there are some more minor remedies than written reprimand, would give more guidance to employees and supervisors. The employee had that, something like this, not this particularly. And they knew that on the first offense, they're going to get a written admonishment. And
what's abuse of sick leave? Does that mean
they're
sick
off
and
every
not?
Monday morning?
Taking every Monday off, being
Monday.
Sick every Monday.
There's a
then it happens
pattern.
Quite often. Mm-hmm. Pattern. You can track it down.
I think it'd be a very valid topic for us to take up if it's going to be applied as uniformly as possible to all employees of the state. But if we're going to end up with 8 different bargaining agreements, turn it around and change it differently, and all the product of this committee comes out to be is applying to 17 employees, I'm not sure it's worth the expense.
Well, I would think it would be helpful to the unions as well as to the few people that are under them.
I'm not taking issue with you, Ken, but you all the time make reference to 17 employees. When I talk about these, I'm talking about every employee in the state of Alaska. And I don't care what the bargaining units say or anything else. Those contracts, when they come up, are open. Every single one of them are open. The state can dismiss a contract and say there is no contract. when at that determination date and say, we don't have no more contract with you. We're gonna be non-union. Now, I mean, there is that possibility. So what I'm getting at is that when I address it as everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, Griggs shook his head yes, that it would be helpful to the union.
Well, it would, because the employees, more often than not, if they are aware of the types of infractions that will jeopardize their continued employment.
Well, there's no way that I'm going to have a set of dismissal with you and a different set with you and a third one with you, all with different things in them of what constitutes dismissal of employees.
Because that's subject to negotiation.
You might
come up with the most ideal set or matrix showing how you handle infractions. And your union might feel that there's certain parts of it that don't apply to your union and you want to negotiate those out. You might want to make some modifications to other parts. GGU might want to do something a little differently because they have a different clientele that they're based on.
Those are not negotiable as far as I'm concerned.
They are
a master plan that sets down for every state employee, and they're non-negotiable.
They are negotiable, Senator. However, in the context of the law, they are negotiable, but
only because the state allows them to become negotiable, that's all.
They are under the law, but what I'm saying is that you can't tell me that any labor organization is going to take their people out on the street over some house rules on discipline, unless they are so totally unacceptable they won't work. There isn't one in the state that'll do that to you. That's what I'm saying, is that, that on the basis of a general disciplinary schedule, there isn't a negotiator on the union side of the table that's going to take his people out on the street over that.
I would think you guys would be happy if it's fair.
The other way to handle that is to bring in representatives of all the organizations you deal with and sit down and work one out so that you have one.
I was going to move
the other way you do is just make it and put it in the law that it's non-negotiable, and then you guys can do whatever you want with it. Well, you know, don't think because it's a union that it's invincible.
It is invincible.
To you it is, not to the state it is. Now, that isn't necessarily how I personally agree, but I'm trying to reflect the truth of the matter.
Yeah,
you're always arguing about this union says this one says this one isn't going to do this, this one. You're all going to do what the state tells you to do, or you're not going to be working for the state, and you can stand out there with a picket line all you want to, and the state still doesn't operate.
That's the choice they have.
That's right.
Well, I think it's a good suggestion to have a committee, you know, to sit down and draw up something that's going to work for all employees in the state, with a graduated series of penalties.
Put that together, would you, Terry? Is there any other business? You guys have enough harangue for today?
Yes, we didn't have much.
Yeah. Are you going to go down and listen to the speech?
Oh, yes.
I'll walk down.
All right. If there's no other business come before the commission, we will meet again on in December. About a month from now. Okay? I want to thank you, everybody. Thank you very much. And I want to especially thank you, Fred.
Pleasure working with you.